John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Don, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland here on the south side of town, Willie Donick on the east side of town, Chase McCabe on the west side of town, Elijah Campbell back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, manning things there at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by Rumble On. Adam Vingen from The Athletic is on the line with us. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
You're downtown. What has downtown been like the last 4 or 5 days?
It's dead. My wife and I went for a run a few days ago. Oh, by the way, I've taken up running. We went for a run a few days ago, and we ran up Broadway. And it's eerie, man, just the sight of Broadway with no people on it. There was still some music being played, but no audience. Where I live in the Gulch area, which is usually a very happening place, there are very few people around. I don't mind it just because it's a lot more quiet, but it certainly is a bit apocalyptic feeling when I go for a walk outside and there are no cars and no people around.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool if you could take advantage of that and just do normal routine stuff, but you can't really do anything. So it's like, that's great that nobody's around, but you don't get to take advantage of that. There's been a lot of new news on the sports front of more postponements, and it looks like the Olympics is not going to happen until 2021. That wasn't supposed to start until July 24th. It just, to me, Adam, the more and more things are pushed and pushed and pushed, and every state is just coming out, and governors and mayors are just saying, hey, stay put. Unless you need something, the essential needs, something that is deemed necessary for your household, stay in your house. The more this continues, it does make you wonder, like, what is truly realistic on the sports front of leagues coming back, when leagues would start up, and if any of those things would even happen at all. How would you answer that?
It's a tough question to answer. And within the past hour, the NHL sent out a press release with a Q&A of sorts, answering frequently asked questions about their response to the coronavirus. And it was March 15th, I believe, when the CDC made the recommendation of not holding public gatherings of more than 50 people for 8 weeks. And in the press release, the NHL said that if things seem to be improving by the day 45 of that 60-day recommendation, perhaps they would move into having discussions about opening up team facilities and allowing players to begin training for a possible resumption of the season. 45 days from March 15th, I believe, according to Google, is April 29th. And I have a hard time believing that by April 29th, things are going to be so much better that we are going to be able to start thinking about the possibility of sports returning. So, you know, I am of the mind that, you know, the NHL season specifically, and that also goes for the NBA season as well, probably, is over. I believe there's a board of governors called this afternoon in the NHL that might provide some sort of, you know, some answers regarding the finances of the league and what they think is best. But, you know, Robbie Stanley and I were talking about this on our show Smash Brothers on Friday, and I said if by Memorial Day, like, we were talking about drop-dead dates, like, if the NHL can't resume by what date, should they just cut their losses and move on? I said if the NHL can't see itself resuming by Memorial Day, they just have to end it. And as things continue to get worse around the world, I just have a hard time believing that we're going to be seeing professional sports again this season.
Yeah. The Predators did make a move today. They inked Connor Ingram, their goaltender, to a new 3-year contract. What did you make of that deal?
I like it because Connor Ingram has been sensational, or was sensational, in the American Hockey League this year for the Milwaukee Admirals. He was an AHL All-Star, you know, one of the best goaltenders in the league in terms of goals against average and save percentage. The AHL does not have the breadth of statistics that the NHL does, but you know, he and Troy Grosnick helped the Admirals allow the fewest goals in the league, if I'm not mistaken. And Ingram certainly has made a case to be maybe the next man up in the Predators' goaltending rotation when Pekka retires. So I like the deal. It looks like it's a two-way deal through the first 2 years and a one-way deal in the third year. You know, not a very big cap hit in the at the NHL level, so it won't cost them much. But I like it. I really liked what I've seen from Connor Ingram. I went to Milwaukee in February and spoke with him. Seems to be doing really well here in the organization after a falling out of sorts with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So all in all, I think it was a really solid signing by David Poile.
Adam Vingan is with us from The Athletic. Adam, you went back and forth again in the whole Roman Josi for Norris argument. And it's interesting, just all of what, in context of all what we're talking about here, as the timetable continues to look like it's going to get further and further pushed back, you wonder how they're going to resume any kind of regular season play. They'd be fortunate to do that for sure. So the reality is, you could, in theory, vote for the player awards right now because it's based on the regular season. So The Athletic actually did that, and Roman Josi won the award for the Norris, and he won it actually pretty easily. But Adam, as you and I have talked about first, before we get into sort of your debate that you had, you pointed this out to me, and I hadn't thought of it this way. The Athletic is more comprised of writers that are a little bit more on the younger side, more apt to be up on the fancy stats, the analytics that would point more towards Roman Josi, and it may not be a true indication of what the vote would be like for an actual Norris Trophy voter among all of the writers. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, The Athletic, you know, represents only a portion of the voters who, you know, which is the Professional Hockey Writers Association. So, you know, certainly Roman Josi winning the Norris by a convincing margin in our vote that we published today, you know, it would be a good sign for him. But I also wonder if the pausing of the season actually might work against him, in the sense that I think if he were to have a great stretch run and help carry the Predators into the playoffs, I think that would have cemented him in the eyes of voters, even those who may be not as statistically inclined as I am. But I'm wondering if, because the season looks to be over or could be over, that actually might work in John Carlson's favor, because people will see, despite the fact that John Carlson was nowhere near as dynamic in the second half of the season, that he finished with 75 points, was on pace for 89 points. A defenseman in the NHL hasn't had at least 89 points in, I believe, 20 years or around there, or actually be close to 30 years. I think it was the 1993-94 season. So I'm wondering if the older sect of voters might actually flock more towards Carlson because Josi did not have the opportunity to carry the Predators into the postseason down the stretch. But in my personal opinion, as you know, Willie, and as people who follow me know, I think Roman Josi has wrapped up this award, in my opinion. I believe he is a more complete defenseman than John Carlson, and I believe the fact that he was able to carry this team, despite the fact that so many of his teammates who make similar salaries, at least similar salaries to what he'll be making next year, underperformed. The fact that he's their leading scorer and has basically put the team on his back for the majority of the season. It sounds like a Hart Trophy argument versus a Norris Trophy argument, but I believe that you should take that into consideration if you're voting for the Norris this year.
So if you're not familiar, The Athletic, and we're going to give Adam a chance to throw this out there, there's a chance for a free trial here if you don't already subscribe, but there are 41 writers that cover the NHL for The Athletic. And of those 41 writers in the Norris Trophy vote, 63% voted for Roman Josi and only 24% voted for John Carlson. But that being said,
I believe it was 26 for Yossi and 10 for Carlson, I believe was the actual number. In terms of the actual number of people who voted.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's take it to what you were talking about before, though. These, again, are writers that tend to be more apt on the layered statistics. But explain what you explained to me when we were actually up in Toronto discussing this about sort of the old school voters who might just be apt to look more at the points and, hey, the Capitals are having a great year, so let's reward the guy on the best. Because there's still a lot of voting along those lines, isn't there?
There is. And oftentimes with the Norris Trophy, it is awarded to either the leading scorer or second leading scorer among defensemen. I believe it is 8 of the past 10 Norris Trophy winners have finished the season either first or second in scoring. And actually, first in scoring among defensemen is John Carlson, and second is Roman Yossi. So that will continue. But oftentimes, when you look at points, you disregard the other aspects of what makes a defenseman Norris Trophy worthy. And I believe in the description of the award, you know, it talks about the all-around ability. And no one would deny that John Carlson, especially in the first half of the season, was playing incredibly on the offensive end. But if you look deeper into some of the defensive statistics, the Capitals actually fared worse with him on the ice defensively than when he was on the ice versus Roman Yossi, who improved the Predators when he was on the ice versus when he was off the ice. Those are those relative statistics that we like to use. And my argument, when you look past the points, and Willie, you know this, and Darren and Chase, you know this too. When you look at Roman Yossi's ability to drive play, you know, there is no better defenseman in this league than Roman Yossi in that regard. The amount of time he has the puck on his stick per game, there's only one defenseman in the NHL, Thomas Chabot. Actually, one player in the NHL, Thomas Chabot of the Ottawa Senators, who has the puck on his stick more per game than Roman Yossi this season. And in terms of transition, in terms of end-to-end rushes, taking the puck from the defensive zone into the offensive zone, you know, Roman Yossi's peers in that category are people like Connor McDavid, you know, who's a perennial MVP candidate. So, yes, Roman does not have as many points as John Carlson, but in terms of how he affects the game and impacts the Predators' ability to generate offense, there is no player, there is definitely no defenseman, and arguably no player in the league who has a greater influence on that than Roman.
Well, Adam, Chabot only has the puck on the stick just as much as Yossi because he plays 48 minutes a game.
Yes.
That's the only reason why.
That is true.
Yeah, I'm not sure he leaves the ice for Ottawa. They don't have much. The Senators don't have much.
No, they do not. Except two players with coronavirus, but hopefully they're okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Adam, you went back and forth with Tariq El-Bashir, who is your compadre that covers the Capitals for the Athletic.
Yeah,
it seemed to me, I read his argument, it's a good argument, but I even wonder down deep, does he seemed to be, how should I say this, he seemed to be sort of conceding some of your points that you were making about Yossi and saying, you know what, I can't really argue with that.
No, well, maybe I'm just really great at arguing. Maybe
you should have won the debate class.
Yeah. Well, I was in the model, not was it Model UN, it was the mock trial or whatever it was. I did that for a little bit in middle school and high school. So maybe it came from there. But I understand Tarek's argument. It's just that when you look at, you know, Tarek's primary argument was when you look at John Carlson's season offensively in the context of some of the greatest offensive seasons by a defenseman in league history, you know, you can argue, you know, that, you know, Carlson deserves the award. But I just kept going back to what we were talking about, that it's easy and it certainly is tempting to anoint John Carlson as the Norris Trophy winner just based on his points or his projected points, his pace. But to be a good defenseman in the NHL, to be an elite defenseman in the NHL, you have to do more than be able to put up points. And Roman Yossi, I feel like, has shown, especially over the past couple of years, and I think specifically this season, that yes, he is capable of putting up points, but he is not a liability on the defensive end. That is not to say that John Carlson is a liability on the defensive end, but his defensive statistics are not as spectacular as Roman's. So I would have a very hard time, and you know, I do my best to be objective. you know, when it comes to watching the Predators and voting for them in awards. But I would have a really hard time comprehending anyone other than Roman Josi winning the Norris Trophy this year. I mean, there could be an argument to be made that Carlson doesn't even deserve to be the second, you know, leading candidate. You could make an argument for Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues, for example, as potentially the second best candidate. But it's probably going to end up being Roman Josi and John Carlson 1-2 somehow.
We're talking to Adam Vingan of The Athletic. And Adam, as we have this pause, you know, we see David Poile. You brought up the Connor Ingram signing, and they've signed a couple of collegiate free agents and things like that. Do you think that this changes his way of thinking when it comes to some unrestricted free agents and Craig Smith or Mikhail Granlund? Does it change at all for him, or do you think it has any effect?
That's a really good question, Chase, and I have been recently thinking about that myself, because I imagine there are going to be teams in similar positions to the Predators. You know, a team that's currently on the playoff bubble, you know, whether they're right in, you know, whether they're in or they're out, there are going to be teams that take cover, that use this pausing of the season to take cover and say, well, we couldn't truly evaluate how things were going because the season ended before, you know, we could make the playoffs, or we could get to the playoffs or attempt to reach the playoffs, whatever you want to say. And I think there are definitely going to be teams. I mean, like, look, for example, my colleague at The Athletic, Scott Powers, who covers the Chicago Blackhawks, recently reported that Stan Bowman's going to be returning and Jeremy Colleton is going to be returning. If the Blackhawks would have missed the playoffs, which it looked like they were going to, would Stan Bowman and Jeremy Colleton still have jobs? I mean, it's hard to say. So I'm hoping that David Poile is not going to allow that type of thinking to seep into how he addresses this team in the offseason, because even though the team had performed better under John Hines in terms of its record, it was in a playoff spot when the season was suspended. We do have 70 games of sample, and there are a lot of players who did not live up to their potential this season.
How do you think this is, by the way, Adam? What if they don't? What if this is it? And this is they try and they just cannot come back, and that was it. That last game in Montreal, and the season is going to close for this year. How do you think that will also affect, with all the money lost with organizations, how do you think that will affect the free agents in the offseason? Do you think that is going to drive prices way down?
Yeah, it will certainly affect the salary cap.
Right.
You know, the salary cap won't be as high, and that may cause some difficult decisions for the Predators or any team. But, you know, to Chase's point, you know, regardless of what the cap is, and you know, that's ultimately what David Poile has to work with, I'm hoping that he still takes the long view with this group, looks at the season that they had, whether or not it ends after 69 games or not, and decide what's best for this team moving forward. Because if the Predators would have played an 82-game season and missed the playoffs, remember, David Poile decided to keep the band together, as he said, at the trade deadline. If the Predators play 82 games and miss the playoffs, there's no way he can sell that again. And you would have to imagine there would be even more significant changes this offseason. But now, perhaps he has a more tempered look at things because there are so many unknowns. I'm just hoping, for his sake and the team's future, that he avoids that line of thinking and continues to really analyze this team's long-term prospects.
Last one for me along those lines. John Hines, we know, is on a multi-year contract. I read your piece in The Athletic about how things have looked defensively for this team since he took over. So we know he's going to be back if this is, in fact, the end of the season. But how would you evaluate the rest of the coaching staff and what that might look like?
Yeah, that's a good question, too, just because they were sort of auditioning for their jobs in a way. Well, you know, particularly Dan Muse and Dan Lambert. You know, Rob Scuderi came on as an interim assistant coach, and I wonder if he stays on in a more permanent role. But oftentimes when a new coach comes in, he likes to have his guys behind the bench with him. And when you look at the special teams this year, they've continued to struggle. I mean, Dan Lambert was brought in to fix the power play, and for all intents and purposes, it has not worked out in such a way. I wonder if John Hines decides to move in a different direction that way. And you also wonder about maybe some of the coaches you don't see on the bench, like Ben Vanderklok, for example, you know, the goaltending coach. You know, UC Saros has been one of the best goaltenders in the league since the coaching change, but we've seen what's happened with Pecorine. I mean, how much responsibility, you know, ultimately does Ben take for that? So I do think that there might be some changes on the bench just because John Hines will be entering his first full season as coach and might want more of his guys behind the bench than what he inherited when he replaced Peter Laviolette.
Adam, I feel like we're out of good questions, so we must end this.
I do have one more, and I, at the risk of dropping from the level of great question that Chase just had back-to-back, I know, Adam, you also went back through a lot of numbers because, hey, we all have a lot of time on our hands, but you did a series of analysis comparing, you know, the patch of games, and now you have a decent sample size of games since John Hines took over as opposed to what happened before this season under Peter Laviolette. What is it as simple as to say that because UC Saros started playing so well, that was the biggest difference in Hines versus Laviolette? Or what did you find when you dove back through everything?
Well, I do think that goaltending has played a significant role. When the Predators fired Peter Laviolette, they had the third worst overall save percentage in the NHL. And there is a correlation between a coach's job security and goaltending in the NHL. You even look at some of the other firings that happened this season, you know, including John Hines when he was fired in New Jersey, and Pete DeBoer, and even Gerard Gallant, I believe, as well. You know, bad goaltending gets coaches fired. You know, UC Saros has been one of the best goaltenders in the NHL since the coaching change. There's only one goaltender in the league who has saved more goals above expectation in all situations than UC Saros since the coaching change, and that's Connor Hellebuck, who I believe should win the Vezina Trophy and might even get some Hart Trophy consideration for how well he played this year for the Winnipeg Jets. I was surprised to see that in terms of defense, in terms of the defense and the slot area, that the Predators had regressed slightly under John Hines, because the eye test seemed to me that they were better in that area. But the numbers,
I would agree. I thought the eye test different. Would say it was quite a bit better, but that was interesting to me,
yeah.
As I read your stuff.
That was the most interesting thing to me, was I was expecting a significant improvement in the Predators' defense from the slot under John Hines, but it took a slight dip. And the offense, I think, is probably the most glaring deficiency between the two. The Predators averaging about 2.5 goals per game under Hines, which was 25th in the league. And in terms of even strength goals, they were even worse than that on a per 60-minute basis. So I know it sounds like an oversimplification to say that the reason why the Predators' record was improved under John Hines was simply because of goaltending, but it honestly appears to be the case. I mean, there are other things in play, obviously, but goaltending masks a lot of deficiencies. And UC Saros particularly has been outstanding in the past 6 weeks. And I do think that, you know, more than any other player on the team, he is responsible for this team's improvement before the season was paused.
Adam, we appreciate it. Good stuff as always, and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Hey, Adam.
Adam Vinken from The Athletic. The latest article, Roman Josi versus John Carlson. Who deserves the Norris Trophy? And they discuss it in that piece. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back around Darren, Donick, and Chase. Good stuff there from Adam Vinken, as always. So let's pick up the discussion about, I know it's worst-case scenario. Don't really want to talk about that, but we've got plenty of time to do so, and it's not crazy to think that there's a real shot. Some of these sports are not coming back for this season. They'll just have to try to, I guess, begin normalcy, hopefully, with their upcoming season. So if that were the case, how do you think it would affect the offseason for general managers and players who are looking for contracts, who become free agents? How much do you think that drives down the price tag for them moving forward? Aren't the organizations and general managers going to be able to say, hey, look how much money we lost. We can't possibly pay you that in a new deal. We've got to make up for that, and I don't know how we're going to with so much uncertainty moving forward. How do you think that will play out?
Well, let's start with the Q&A that Adam referred to. The NHL sent out a list of, they called it FAQs, questions that have been asked by a lot of people, fans, media, etc. And one of the questions is, how will the league handle player contracts that expire July 1st in the event the season's end is delayed? Any decision we make on the schedule and critical dates calendar in the offseason ultimately will be done in conjunction with the NHLPA, and in that context, the parties will discuss how to best accommodate the resumption of play determinations that are ultimately made. So what I read into that is, remember that on July 1, that's when typically the free agent period will start. I think we know that date is going to have to be pushed back because if there's any chance to be playing at that point, they'll be playing, right? I think we know that. If there's any chance they have the green light of playing playoffs in July, they'll play the playoffs in July. And that affects how much revenue goes into the bin. So the way the deal is laid out, I can't remember if it's exactly 50-50 or whatever, but you take all that's thrown into the bin, right? And then 50% goes to the players, 50% goes to the owners. So out of that 50% is where you calculate the league revenues and you determine, here's our salary cap. So until you've played all the games, you don't know how much money is in the till, right? So I think that's what's really hard, because before they even really know what they can offer their players, they have to know what the salary cap is. That's what really makes the picture very hazy.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
And all that being said, Chase, all that being said is I would say that you would be wise to look at different scenarios, right? If you're sitting there in your home office, if you're David Poyle or any general manager of a team, you're saying, okay, what if the salary cap is this? What if the salary cap is this? Then what's my game plan?
Yeah, I think you have to look at it that way. And I also believe that it would be crazy to think that the mindset has not changed, because you're not going to have, I mean, you know what you have with some of these players. I mean, you've seen them, you know, in the Predators case, they've seen Craig Smith for a long time. They've seen Mikhail Granlund for the past year and a half since he was acquired at the trade deadline. So you kind of know what you have, but at the same time, you're going to miss a potential playoff run and the end of the regular season. So I do think that not knowing what the salary cap is, that's going to affect things. That is it going to be what they had originally thought? Or is all of this going to affect it in some way? So that's going to go into your decision making. And also, you know, I think Adam brought up a good point. How is David Poyle going to look at this season if, in fact, it is over and there is no resumption of it? Is he going to go, well, you know what? The last handful of games, things got better with John Hines. So how much do I really want to change? Do I want to try and keep both of these guys? Do I want to try and keep one of them? You know, how is he going to look at it that way? Or has he already made up his mind and saying, you know what, this thing needs changes, this is what I'm going to do, and it doesn't affect him at all? But I do think they're all very valid and fair questions, because we simply don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of that, that you brought up, the you know, the coaches and what do you do, because it's going to be, as we know, it's going to be a different offseason. So how do they approach an offseason, especially if there is no closure, right? And it just ends like this. You don't know how it plays out. Did they get in? Did they not get in? Did they get in and make a run? Did they get in and lose in the first round? Did they get swept? You know what I mean? It's just so much uncertainty, because, well, let's be honest, that would change everything. I mean, just think about, you know, if we played the what-if game in the 2016-2017 season. I mean, after 70 games, we would have been going, did they get in? Did they not get in? Right? I mean,
I can't remember if they were in or not after 70 games of that season. That'd be an interesting thing to look back on. After 69 or 70 games, where were they in the standings that year?
Nobody would have said, hey, let's play it out. They go to the Stanley Cup final. And then guess what? That changes everything, because it did.
Right.
If that team doesn't make the playoffs, it changed, right? Everything would have been different than a run to the Stanley Cup final. So,
because who knows? They could make a run this year. I mean, they could have gotten in. They could go win the whole thing. And that changes your whole way of thinking, because do you really blow something up after you win the cup, even though we all know, you know, the ups and downs that they've had this season? Or does David Poyle go, well, you know what? The season's done. I can't really, you know, I can take a few things away from it, but the history books are going to show that the season was ended before anything was decided, and then he goes from there. I don't know. I don't know how he's thinking. I don't know what his group of advisors, what they're thinking. And that's what's so fascinating about all of this is it's a mindset that nobody has ever had before, because you haven't had to, because you haven't been faced with something like this, at least in our lifetime. And so
it's not new. Just David Poyle. So yeah, what's the mindset of all the other GMs? Is it going to be active? Are people interested in trading? Or is everybody interested in just standing pat because nobody knows how it ended? I don't know. I mean, what's the mindset of the rest of the league, too?
It's valid.
It's a very valid question.
One
thing that Elliot pointed out to us, Elliot Friedman, he said what they might decide to do at some point is just decide on a ballpark figure before they even know what the revenue is. Say, okay, here is what we're going to go with. This is what we projected before. Here's an estimate on how much money we're going to not get as a result of these games not being played. And so let's pick the cap figure of X. And let's hope that cap figure doesn't just decimate rosters. Like, you know, you would think if you just did it by the book to the dollar that they're not going to be able to recapture, at least in the short term, that salary cap figure could be pretty far down. But that's why I think they might just pick a figure and say, all right, just for the good of everybody, here's what the cap figure is going to be.
Well, you couldn't do it that way, though, Willie, could you? I mean, that would be how many teams would that affect? I mean, you couldn't really base it off, you know, if they didn't come back. I mean, how many teams are flirting, you know, around the upper echelon or the upper portion of a salary cap? If it went drastically down, I mean, you'd have all of a sudden all kinds of teams in jail, salary cap jail, right? It would affect
exactly.
their rosters
so
big
that's
time.
That's why I think you have to sort of artificially keep the salary cap number to a number that makes sense, that doesn't force you to cut a bunch of players loose with money that's already committed, right? You have a lot of players that already have their contracts set for next year at a certain level. So it's going to be a difficult thing. But one thing I've seen written about, I think is a good one, is the partnership is going to be tested here. This is a chance for the league and the players to get together and really – try to work together to get through this, right? What's fair for the players and what's good for the league? Yeah. You know, what kind of sacrifices do the players need to make to see that the league gets through this? Because, you know, just like every economy is doing the math right now, every economy is going to get hit hard in the next few months. And it's got to take a back seat to the health crisis here. We got to get through the health crisis first. And we have a pretty reasonable assumption that the economy is going to come back when the time is ready, but we're all going to have to go through and deal with how we get through that in the meantime.
Johnny can chase on the other five of the game. I was reading something during the break. Paul Feinbaum is saying on his show that college football's decision makers are very concerned about the 2020 college football season. Mm. What do you guys make of that? Already being put out there on March 23rd.
It's reality. I think the reality is the more you watch this, if you watch the news coverage, the more that the possibility exists, right? You just you can't get around it. It's the only conclusion you can draw is that all scenarios are on the table here.
And I think you have to think about it. I mean, I know nobody wants to. Nobody wants to face that reality that it could that could be reality, but you have to. I mean, you have to be realistic that this is an ever-changing situation, not just by the day, but by the hour. And there are a lot of things that we're learning, but then there are a lot of things that we still don't know. And so I think you have to go into it going that anything is possible in all of this. And I brought up the question earlier that we don't necessarily want to talk about, but that is, could sports just be done for this year? And it'd be 2021 when everything gets picked up again. We don't know that. We hope not. But I do think you have to prepare yourself for every scenario. And Sawyer agrees.
That was a good point.
By the way, you know, you got Sawyer there, but Are we going to hear a little more guitar today, like to at the end of the show? I think we need to go out to another guitar solo.
Could do that.
In the next segment. I'm planting the seed for the next segment here.
No, we got it. I can do it.
And how much will this affect, you know, Greg Sankey's been doling out some big, big checks every year to every SEC school, all 14 schools, where they get close to $50 million each. This go-around down in Destin, what's next year's check going to look like?
Ooh.
I think pretty much every business is in their own mind on their whatever level it is, whether business, medium business, small business, they're all asking themselves that same question, right? They're trying to prepare. What's next year's check going to look like? Or, you know, what's next year's revenue going to look like? I think we all know that we have a lot of confidence in our economy if once we're through this. I think we're going to come back booming. You know, I hear a lot of people, you know, speculating that that are the experts, right? The economic experts are very confident in that. But we just don't know how long this period's going to go. And so in the meantime, we're going to take a big hit.
Obviously, you've been watching it more than me. Why do they feel that it would come back booming?
Well, because this economic crisis is not based on, you know, a flaw in our economic system. Like 2008, right, there was a lead up. There was no health crisis that caused the bust. You know, some stock market crashes before, you know, 1987. Believe me, I never took an economics class at Vanderbilt, so I don't want to get over my head. But I'm going to keep it very, very basic on a level that I understand it. But this is a health crisis, right? It's not really an economic crisis. The economic crisis is being caused by the health crisis.
And right, but it's affecting millions of people.
Of course it is, but we have to save lives, right? If we had no regard for human life,
one's debating that. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, though, the reality is it's going to affect millions of people's jobs, too. It already is. And so what is the lasting effect of all these people that have, you know, had to make do, and however we're all going to get through this, that the minute we stabilize and get back, that it's going to boom? I mean, I would think people are still going to be like, whoa, I'm not ready to
boom. Well, it's going to take a while to come out of it, but my point would be this. Once we're ready to start opening the doors to play hockey games, just for an example, or let's just take the arena as a whole, all those people that are working at the arena, they're going to have those jobs. Those jobs are available, and people are going to come to those games. People are going to come to the concerts.
Yeah,
I think, you know, we're going to be excited for these.
The hope.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's not about excitement. It's not about getting out. It's about how much does this affect every individual listening and all the people that it's going to affect their, you know, their bank accounts and right, how do they survive through this? It's not about money.
This is over my head. But this is what the government is talking about right now, is how to, in the short term, you know, fund the businesses. You know, how are they going to, you know, fund the businesses with a bridge loan, or, you know, send people directly money? All of these things are the things that they're trying to work on right now. I know it's, you know, different people have different philosophies on how to get that done, but that's going to be the key in the next few months, is for the government to buy some time by basically sending people money or sending businesses money so they can keep their employees employed while we get through this. It's unprecedented, right?
Well, I mean, they're helping people out. I mean, they are.
We're trying.
Yeah. I mean, the taxes, right? Tax deadline's July 15th, and I've seen
that
already
states.
That was
one of the first things that we got to tangibly say, hey, we get 3 more months before we got to pay our taxes. Well, these are the kind of things that they're trying to do to get through this.
I know they've asked, you know, a lot of lenders, you know, not to foreclose on people and give people, I guess, relief when it comes to mortgage payments and stuff. So these are all necessary steps to helping with what you just said, that hopefully, look, I'm not debating it. I'm just asking questions. I'd like to know. That's not my area of expertise either. I just have questions. I'd love to know some of that stuff, and maybe that is because the desire to want to boom is for sure. The desire to want to do everything the minute we get past this is going to be there. Look, we're all going to go stir crazy before this is all over. We are going to be dying to do anything and everything once we can leave in our homes and return to normalcy. But the question is, how many people will be able to, you know, return and do whatever they want or what they were doing before because of the income, you know, of how people have dealt with that during this, because of lost income. Or hopefully we're going to figure out all these ways. And we brought that up, and this is what I know. That's what I brought up, is it's been nice to see, like, what the Predators are doing and other companies are doing. They are trying their best to pay, to keep paying people that were scheduled to work certain things. And that is going to go a long ways. And hopefully, you know, that'll help if we get out of this sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I'm just curious to see.
In the meantime, work hard not to get this virus, right? Stay yeah. locked down. So work hard every day to do the job, and that is to not get it, not spread it. Let's flatten that curve, and then all of that hopefully will help us get through this as quick as we can.
I'm also curious. Oh, go ahead. Take us to break. Sorry.
All right. We'll come back. You practice, because I think what we'll do is we'll probably just turn it over to you at the very, very end and let you kind of play it out.
Okay.
How does that sound?
I got the song for that.
All right. We'll come back and wrap up Monday's edition of Darren and Donnick and Chase next. A lot of you checked out. We talked about this at the beginning of the show. Predators 2017 first-round playoffs against the Blackhawks. Games 1 through 4 aired on Saturday. The sweep of the Hawks. And then yesterday was the Western Conference Final against those Ducks. Games 1, 3, 5, and 6 played out our airwaves. We're going to continue giving you Predators instant classic replay games. And I believe tomorrow will be Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final versus Pittsburgh back in 2017. Thursday will be the win versus St. Louis, okay? Which was that, I think that was the home and home this year. So that'll be on Thursday.
Well,
tomorrow will be at 6. Thursday will be at 7 o'clock on those two replays. And then there'll be more action on Saturday and Sunday over the weekend. I know Sunday's going to be the St. Louis series, the second round series against the Blues in 2017.
Yeah, that one was fun. And so I guess Thursday, that's the game you guys are showing on TV, right, right, Willie, against St. Louis?
I didn't have it in front of me. I will double check to verify that.
Yeah,
so that'll be cool to kind of have the same games on radio and TV.
No, you guys had the Coyotes game on last night, Fox Sports Tennessee.
We did. The Predators won that game, by the way.
They did. It was the day before the last game before the break. Christmas break.
And that was a great performance by Roman Josi during that torrid week or two that he had, where he had a 5-game goal scoring streak and then had a bunch of assists on top of that. That was a great showcase for Josi for Norris in that performance, for sure.
I also think down the road, I know within like the next week or so, we're also going to replay the Clemson LSU College Football National Championship game. I think that's going to be not tomorrow, but the following Tuesday. So we've got some good
stuff in
store. Yeah. Yeah. Be a lot of fun. Was looking at Charles. I'm sure you guys have seen Charles Barkley. Remember, he was tested. The results came back negative. So good for him. It's not really a ton of NFL news and notes today. I think that's starting to
quiet down.
There was a trade?
The Carolina Panthers have traded a quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Pass that along. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, now they've traded Kyle Allen. It wasn't Cam Newton. And my Twitter just jumped on me, and where did he get traded to?
They've brought in P.J. Walker, who played in the XFL, played at Baylor with Matt Rhule, correct?
Yep, they did that, and so that makes sense. And, you know, he was somebody that I think people thought could get a job out of the XFL.
I'm sorry, at Temple. I said Baylor, at Temple.
So the Redskins have traded for Kyle Allen. So Kyle Allen leaving Carolina, going to Washington, according to reports. Yep. So there are some dots to connect. Cam Newton, though, still on the roster, and I saw over the weekend that they may just end up releasing him.
Yeah, I don't think that – I don't think they're going to have a choice, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the trade market really is for him.
I think that's again, it comes back to, remember Cam Newton's tirade on social media saying, I didn't ask for you guys to tell me to go find a trade. But the reality is, Cam, we're hoping, you know, this will look better for you if you can find a trade, because we're going to release you. That's what they didn't want to have to say, but that's really what they were saying, right?
That's exactly what they were saying. So, looks like P.J. Walker is the first XFL player to sign an NFL contract. We knew that that would happen, and indeed it has. So, it looks like the Panthers will roll Matt Rhule as their coach, with Teddy Bridgewater and P.J. Walker under center next season. So, Chase, we're going to turn things over to you and play us out on this Monday. You have a great rest of your day.
We'll talk to you
tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Here's Chase Maccabee.
About Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.